What we do here is go back.
Yeah, good mate. Thanks for having me.
We're the hardest in the celebrations.
Can't say myself, can I?
Sort of almost got to tell yourself that you're a big game player or a big finals player. So somehow I thought, well, just because I play well as a 13-year-old, I'd have to play well in the grand final.
Me and Cogs are a couple of good WA boys, and we do get a bit affectionate with each other, always giving each other kisses and stuff. Nah, not really, just, you know, a manly kiss on the cheek every now and then.
Welcome back to the Bray and Ethan podcast for episode number 8, and how familiar, we have a number 8 on the show with us. Bray Loveridge is your host, and as always, joined by Ethan Roth. Ethan, how are we?
Yeah, good, and we got a last member of the Eagles today, and as you said, how I guess you could say it's a coincidence, number 8 for the Eagles, and this is episode number 8. He was pick 11 in the 2003 draft, 120 games for the West Coast Eagles, where he was a vice captain, 2006 premiership player, 2009 best club and award, 2010 Jeff Christian medalist, which is actually the best and fairest player out of the two WA teams, 2012 All-Australian and Most Courageous AFL Player Award, and 2014 Jim Stein's Community Leadership Award for his work outside of the game, which we'll touch on more later, Ray. And he's certainly was a fan favourite during his 12 years or so at the club. It's Bo Waters. Bo, thanks so much for your time. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Yeah, hey lads, how you going? Thanks a lot for reaching out.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for coming on. And we know you're originally from Happy Valley in South Australia. So talk to us about playing for West Adelaide, making the under-18 All-Australian team, and then getting drafted to the Eagles with your great mate, Sam Butler, at just 17.
Yeah, well, mate, we played down at Happy Valley. We're called the Vikings, and great club. You know, like many local clubs, it's sort of the lifeblood of that local community, and fell into the West Adelaide catchment. Spent a lot of time down there from sort of age 13 and went through the development squads, and yeah, I was lucky enough to progress through. We had such fantastic teams growing up. You know, Happy Valley, we won 3 premierships in a row. West Adelaide, we won a couple of premierships undefeated. And then in my last year there, we lost the SANFL Grand Final to Central Districts, which is ironically enough Sammy Butler's team at that time. And then went into the draft. That same year was the Under-18 Carnival, which is a great experience. You get to go and play against the other elite juniors around the country. And it was in Western Australia. Where was it? I can't remember where it was. Great tournament. We had a relatively good team. I managed to string together a couple of games and was awarded All-Australian, which was quite cool. And then, got picked up in the draft, and fortunately with another South Australian, and I believe Sammy and I were the only 2 South Australians on the West Coast list at that stage. So, you know, we were the butt of most jokes, you know, what we like to eat and how we talk and who we grew up supporting and the like. And not knowing the whole playing squad as well probably was a bit of a difference compared to other people.
Yeah, nice. And you made your debut in round 3 of 2004 against Essendon. How pleasing was it to receive a Rising Star nomination later in the year as you played 9 more games? And on the flip side of that, how challenging was it to be ruled out of all of 2005 with osteitis pubis?
Yeah, your first year is an interesting one. You go into a club, you know, being a big fish in the juniors and having high expectations, and you pretty quickly get brought down to earth. You know, you're running around with guys like Chris Judd, Ben Cousins, Andrew Embley, didn't debut in round 1, had a sore knee, but managed to play a half-decent game in the Waffle the next week and then got selected. And, it's a huge thrill, like childhood dream to run out on the ground. We played against on the Telstra Dome against Essendon, and it was actually that game, you guys might be a bit young to remember, but it was the game where James Heard kicked that really cool goal in the last minute of the game and hugged the big fella in the crowd. Yeah. Yeah, I think there was like 8 different lead changes. And so that was my sort of induction into the AFL realms. It was, you know, we were 8 goals down halfway through the first quarter. I was thinking, wow, this is going to be a bloodbath. And we kicked the next 9. And anyway, a great experience, great game. And then you sort of walk away with that with a taste in your mouth and you just want more and more. And typical of my career, I had a few injuries through that year and managed to string a few games together at the end of the year. And 2004, and we actually found really good form too. I think we won 7 out of our last 8 or thereabouts, and ended up finishing in the 8 and played Sydney at Olympic Stadium there and lost under pretty trying conditions. But yeah, it was a great first year. It was fantastic. It was a good experience. You always, you know, clearly you want to play more games, but it was a lot of fun. And then, yeah, sort of put everything into the next pre-season, wanting to come back and be bigger and better and stronger, and ended up breaking down and missing that whole next year, 2005, with osteitis. And the boys obviously lost the grand final that year. And, yeah, that whole year leaves a bit of a bitter taste in your mouth. But, you know, I had some pretty good people around me, and a lot of them gave sort of sound advice to focus on some of the things that you're not so good at, and invested a bit of time off-field and, you know, worked on my strength in the gym and core stability and stuff like that. And yeah, it was positioned pretty well for a decent year in 2006. And yeah, as you know, I got to play almost every game. I missed one or two games, I think. And then, yeah, part of that premiership team that next year.
Yeah, so you obviously bounced back in 2006, playing 23 games, so just missing out on a couple. But you were outstanding on grand final day, even getting a Norm Smith medal vote. And you probably would have got more if it wasn't for Embers. Can you tell us your memories of the day and specifically that rivalry with the Swans?
Yeah, oh, look, you know, I was the youngest guy on the field for that game, I took it for granted, to be honest. I thought it was going to come around again, and
yeah,
really wanted to enjoy the experience. And the benefit of being so young is you're somewhat naive, you know, fortunately, through the junior career, played in quite a few grand finals, mostly successful ones. So sort of knew what it was like to play on that last day, and the focal point of, you know, win or loss, it determines whether you're a premiership player or not. Ran out, really just wanted to have a good time, had lots of family and friends there, and just soaked up the atmosphere. You know, 100,000 people cheering at the G is a pretty cool experience. And the game, to this day, I haven't actually watched the game, so my recollection is relatively limited. I've got, you know, snippets of different sort of play involvements and some sort of pivotal times in the game where, you know, Goodie ran out of the middle at just after half time and shifted that momentum, and, you know, and then we managed to wrestle it back, and it was pretty typical of our relationship and our rivalry with Sydney. It was sort of a hard-fought game, relatively low scoring, lots of tackles, lots of lead changes, and just tight. And you always knew you played Sydney, you walked off pretty sore, bruised and battered. And yeah, fortunately, unlike the year before, fortunately we ended up getting up by that single point. And you know, the little sphincter was pretty tight in that last couple of minutes when the ball was inside their 50, and playing on guys like Schneider and little Ziffy Fords that, you know, could have turned the result. But yeah, nonetheless, you get to be a premiership player for the rest of your life, and it's a pretty cool part of my career.
Yeah, it's unreal, and I imagine the celebrations would have been pretty wild, and I think you even lost your voice. But is it true you ate your premiership teammate Adam Hunter's goldfish? Is there any truth to this?
There is some truth to that. Yeah, not my proudest moment, but. You know, it's look, a lot of people enjoy Japanese and eat sushi and stuff like that. So that was my justification. It was just a little bit of sashimi.
Love that. You obviously had some injury issues in the next few years, and the side wasn't going well itself. Although it was tough for the club, it must have been pleasing to win best clubman and finish top three in the best and fairest with that win of the Jeff Christensen medal during that period.
Yeah, that stuff's awesome. You know, the club is in so many respects as a family, and really cognizant of the what we need to do within the community. And you know, footy is the lifeblood of so many people's households, and you know, it gives a lot of people hope, and also it's just something to cheer about and support on the weekend. And so, you know, I really loved getting back in and being involved in various community-related projects and, you know, trying to be the best clubman I could, I guess. And ironically enough, you end up getting more out of that than you give, typically, which is a pretty cool thing. And, yeah, you know, I really wanted to make the most of times where I was on the sidelines, not just sort of sitting and wasting my time. So that was nice. And it was good to string some form together in that year where we finished bottom of the ladder as well. Yeah, obviously, pretty disappointing. I think I used to say to people, you know, as a 24-year-old, I'd won a premiership and a wooden spoon in the space of 4 years, which is pretty unique. And then we bounced back and played in a prelim the following year. And, well, to be frank, I'm not sure who was on the voting committee for the Jeff Christensen medal, but they probably got that one wrong. But, look, it is what it is. I guess I'll take it. But, no, it was a really defining period for the club as well. Like, we went through a huge paradigm shift of, you know, purely on-field performance and focus to, you know, needing to recognise that there's more to being a professional athlete than just that. And ultimately, our form suffered, but I think the club is a better place now, and still so many of those values are upheld in that current playing squad, and ultimately bounced back and didn't quite get that end of September result like 2006, but played in, you know, played Geelong in a prelim final in 2011, and that was a great experience as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you were captain a number of times in 2010 when Darren Glass was ruled out with injury. How much did this help you when you were appointed vice captain, and what were the main changes you think happened to turn you guys into a top four team?
Yeah, look, it's a great experience. The cool thing about our leadership group back then was it was peer elected, so you took a degree of confidence in that, you know, your teammates wanted you in that position, and I typically tried not to change too much whether I was a leader, a selected leader, or vice-captain or captain or not, just really try to hold myself to, you know, my own personal expectations and then, you know, try and hold people accountable, but take people on along for the journey as well. And, so it's in terms of preparing for that vice-captaincy, not that much changes. There was a bit of administration, to be honest. We started having a few leadership meetings and, you know, you spend more time on, you know, the morale of the team and trying to sort of generate enthusiasm and all that sort of stuff, and then again the accountability piece, but that was, you know, that was a great experience. Really enjoyed that, and then sort of that top four piece, you know, we largely changed our style of play from memory. We really focused on the defensive side of what we were trying to do, and just locked down. And then we had such a formidable forward line at that point that we would move the ball really quickly and catch sides off. And the late Phil Walsh was instrumental in that turnaround. You know, he drove people mad with the vision we used to have to watch. And you know, some of the clips, which, you know, when you slow it down into slow-mo, it's pretty easy to say you should have been here. But, you know, on game day, like, Walshy, mate, the balls move pretty fast. But, look, he did make you think about things when you're out there. And him complemented with Woosh and then a really hungry team, yeah, we sort of, you know, went from the sort of shit house almost to the penthouse, which was pretty cool. It would have been nice to play in the grand final, but we didn't get that far.
Yeah, and in 2012, you managed to slot into the All-Australian team and won the most courageous in the whole league. Do you think that was your best year? And talk to us about some of those massive hits you were involved in.
Yeah, well, I think from a personal standpoint, it probably was. It was probably my most consistent year as a more established player. 2006 was relatively consistent, but I was still, you know, such a young pup. It was nice to string games together and the body held up, and, you know, you start to get momentum and it breeds a bit of confidence. And we were in a great team. You know, I was playing down back, effectively not playing on anyone, just floating around down there loose, which isn't the hardest role, to be honest. And managed to clunk a few and support guys and get a few kicks myself. And it was a good year. We had a bit of an indifferent finish that year. It was a bit disappointing, but from my own perspective, it was great then to get recognised by, again, my peer group. You know, I've always been conscious that sort of external validation from people that aren't necessarily playing the game is nice, but it wasn't always really accurate. Whereas, you know, I did take a lot of confidence out of the fact that, you know, that was selected by the other players that are playing on the field that, you know, you run out against each week, and then ultimately supported by my, something that, you know, an accolade I probably, you know, hold pretty dear to my heart just because of that reason. It was quite cool. So, yeah, it was a good year. And then in terms of the hits and stuff, it's, yeah, sort of, you know, I put myself in the wrong spot a few times, and guys put themselves in the wrong spot in front of me a few times, and, you know, at times I came off second best, and then vice versa. It was, you know, I enjoyed that aspect of the game. I probably would have been rubbed out for a few more games if I was playing currently, but nonetheless, the still pretty good. And particularly in times where you manage maybe change the momentum of the game, that was always a great result. I enjoyed it. I don't get to do it anymore. Obviously, there's nothing around home. There's no fences or anything to run into, or none of my mates are buying to be shirt fronted. So it's something that's died when I retired.
Yeah, and not only this, but you did take some absolute hangers of some marks, and the one in the Leo Barrow pocket late in the 2006 grand final, and also the one against Richmond to save the game in 2012, I think it was. How good is it to step up and take a big mark or even a big spoil as a defender in the big moments? None more so than those two ones that come to mind.
Yeah. Oh, look. Even a broken clock's right twice a day. I think when you play for a long time, you get lucky. And I didn't have the biggest vertical leap. Probably, was lucky to slide a credit card under my back foot normally, and managed to get it on the right angle and get up there a little bit, and always made them look a bit more dramatic by falling over and landing on my back. I was, wasn't typically that far off the ground, but yeah, nice feeling. It's a cool part of our game as well. It's not something that's replicated really anywhere else in the world. You look at the NFL and the NRL, and their sort of marking capability is completely different to how ours is in our game, and it's not a sort of 360 degree game either. So I think it's one of the really unique aspects of AFL footy. People that watch from overseas and people that don't truly understand the game love that as well. They love seeing the big hits, they love seeing the big marks, and then the skill. I think unless you've kicked an oblong ball as well, sometimes you don't understand the skill of kicking a ball check side from the bets does. But if you recognise, getting that far off the ground is pretty difficult. Normally in a normal world, you need a short ladder to do that stuff. So, no, personally, it was pretty cool. I think as part of the game, I love watching it now.
Yeah, and then unfortunately, the next three seasons didn't go exactly how you wanted it to go, which led to a retirement in early 2015 after playing 120 of a possible 257 games. It would have been difficult and a long decision, but how nice was it to receive so many tributes from opposition players and even the coach, Adam Simpson, saying you were one of the toughest players we've ever seen?
Yeah, when you're a professional, you don't really look in the rearview mirror at all. You just, all systems go. It's about the next week, it's about the next season. And so when you retire, you do reflect a little bit on your career, and clearly, I would have liked to play more games, would have liked to play longer, but hopefully had an impact, both with my teammates, the league and the community and the club across that tenure. So it was nice to hear some of those things. The harsh reality of footy is that, I retire and somebody steps up and gets their opportunity, and there's always going to be another Bo Waters, there's always going to be another, player playing on the halfback flank for West Coast. So you have to have that sort of front of mind as well, and realise that it was as good as it was. It's, you've got to get ready for sort of life after footy, which, you play professionally for 12 years, and I was really lucky. A lot of guys play 3-4 years. But the reality, if I live a long and healthy life, it's probably only, 15% of your life, which is not that much in the big scheme of things.
Yeah, exactly. And a bit of a question we always throw to our special guests, but in terms of funny stories, sprays, or just memories with the boys, can you pinpoint anything in particular?
Oh, look, I'm sure your listeners have probably heard some of this. The two stories that I still find funny that I tell, one was with Chris Judd after he left, and Brett Jones was playing on him, and Juddy had bad shoulders as a junior, and then he had all his shoulders strapped up, and as you know, was a Brownlow medalist, a fantastic player, but really witty, clever guy, really witty. And Jonesy was bumping him down in the back pocket. Yeah. And he said, "What's wrong, Juddy? What's wrong with your shoulders?" And Juddy turns around to him, so quickly, and just says, "Well, I've been carrying you pricks for the last 5 years." and that was just how, that was a typical Chris Judd, sort of wit with the tongue type comment. And the other one that was quite funny was, I think a few PCLs were done, knee PCLs were done over the years, and they changed the circle on the ruck. And so they sort of had a smaller circle that you couldn't go in or something to that effect. And we were playing against the Western Bulldogs, and Luke Darcy was rucking against Dean Cox. And anyway, Luke, very serious. We're about to bounce down for the game, and Luke Darcy said, "Stop, stop, stop," and stops the umpire. And the umpire's like, "What?" He goes, "Mate, that's a free kick. Coxie's nose is in the circle." And I think that just sort of typifies how, you know, quick-witted some of the guys on the field are, but still willing to have a, you know, good bit of good banter as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, some of the quality banter out there. But you've done some work with some charities and organisations, which you've been recognised for on Brownlow Night in 2014 when you won the Jim Steins Community Leadership Award. Tell us about who you're with and how much of an honour that was to win.
Yeah, look, thanks for bringing that up. Like, it was, you know, again, I was really passionate about trying to give back. I firmly believe that, you know, the AFL is successful because of the community involvement and the engagement from the fans, which then, you know, ultimately funds, you know, all the broadcast money and stuff like that. So we get to do what we do because the community loves the game. And with that, spent quite a bit of time with a couple of not-for-profits, and particularly Cancer Council at that point was the ambassador there for close on a decade, I believe, and met some great people and raised a heap of funds through the Cancer Council Dig Deep Day, and which was sort of driven by the club. And, yeah, got recognised in memory of the great Jim Steins, who did so many great things within the community and, you know, grew the game globally as well, coming back from over from Ireland. And so that was a really nice award. Clearly, it's the only time I'm going to be up on stage on Brownlow Night, given, you know, a little back pocket rocket from Happy Valley. But it was great, and I think again it highlights how important community involvement is for the West Coast Eagles. It's, you know, a lot of the clubs have programs, but I think, you know, in terms of competition wide, West Coast community program is better than anyone's, and where, you know, VHB supports a lot of the stuff we do up in the Pilbara. We've got, you know, a lot of the guys are ambassadors for various not-for-profits, and a lot of that stuff goes unheard, particularly when there's sort of some of the negative connotations. We can focus on negative stories. So it needs to be recognised that the guys are definitely community-orientated, and, yeah, I appreciate the club sort of providing a platform for me to do that.
Yeah, it's great that you're giving back. And some people might also know that you're, I guess I could say, a master at doing triathlons and being an Ironman. How's that gone for you, and as well as your role as a market director every day?
I turned my hand to sort of Ironman post-footy, and it's still, whilst the body gave up for competitive sport, contact sport, I still had a bit in the legs and wanted to test myself, and, it, you know, ultimately wanted to get to Hawaii and do the Ironman over there, and managed to get there, secure a spot at an Ironman called Cairns, and went over, and yeah, it's a great experience in terms of pushing yourself and feeling as though you're getting the most out of your mind and your body. That's definitely something worth doing. And, you know, I've done 10 Ironmans now, and I think a handful of half Ironmans, and got back to Hawaii again in 2019, and haven't done any Ironman since that. So it's been sort of 18 months since I did it. I've done anything in that space, and probably the focus has moved a little bit toward work and yeah, a little bit more balance at the moment. You know, coming back, living over in the US for 18 months, then coming back and just wanting to sort of reprioritize a few things. But yeah, it was a great time. You know, you're riding your bike fast and running relatively fast and for a long time. And yeah, you know, I'm never going to be a good swimmer. I was, you know, always close to last out of the water, but that's the reality of a tri sport sort of event. You know, you sort of make up the gap from the swim in the run and the ride.
Yeah. And outside of this, you love to travel, and we saw you went to the US to watch some NBA. What was this like to sit courtside and be arm's length, touching distance from Luka Doncic?
Yeah, no, I had a cool experience over there, actually. So I started work with a firm called Jacobs as their global market director, vice president of their sports and entertainment market. And, you know, part of that was doing a few reconnaissance missions, and our CEO had some tickets to courtside tickets for the Dallas Mavs. So I managed to score those a couple of times and get down courtside. And I think you get a different perspective for how big these guys are and how fast the ball moves. And, you know, it was pretty unbelievable. And, you know, clearly he's an unbelievable player. Dallas, you know, hasn't really lived up to their expectations, but it was a good experience. Didn't sit too far away from Mark Cuban. You know, he's a pretty crazy man himself. And funnily enough, the first time I went and sat courtside, the ball, they typically have a few people down on the ground, you know, having shots, young kids having shots before the game. And a ball bounced my way, and I threw the ball back to this young kid, and he wasn't looking, and poor little fellow hit him right in the face. So I spent the first half of that game just trying to duck my head and feeling very embarrassed and sorry for the young guy. But look, no children were harmed in that event. Just so your listeners know. But yeah. it was great. Really enjoyed it. Love travel as well. It's a great. The US is a great. Launch pad to go anywhere else in the world, you know. Probably didn't get to stay there long enough with COVID, but in hindsight, had a pretty good experience over there, and now back to, you know, what I'd call probably the safest place in the world in Perth.
Yeah. We'll go to the Q&A's now, and shout out to Binny Nutrition. They got around on the socials, and make sure to go to Brian Ethan to ask future guest questions. But this one comes from Aaron McMillan. What was the atmosphere like on grand final day?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's loud. You know, you can't hear yourself think, and it's extremely exciting and exhilarating. And but like most things, when you're there to do a job, the sort of siren goes, and pretty quickly your focus is on winning the ball. You're protecting your teammate, and before you know it, you know, whilst it's loud when there's cheering and goals and big tackles, it typically just becomes a normal game. I think the severity, the sort of the grandness of the event is often experienced in retrospect, I guess.
Yeah. Next one here is from Frankie Holden, 58. What was it like having Ben Cousins leading you into battle?
Yeah, unbelievable for the first couple of years. Now, Ben was a fantastic leader and was the hardest trainer at the club, without doubt. He was great to me as well personally. We used to catch up on a Tuesday, our day off, and have a muffin at Nature's Harvest in Carinup. And so he always had time for everyone at the club. And, you know, clearly he could change the game in the space of a couple of minutes, you know, not dissimilar to some of our other really fantastic players. But, yeah, he was a really inspiring captain for those first couple of years for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And this one comes from Brent_Field23. He wants to know if there was one player you love to get stuck into or get on top of on the ground.
There was a couple. We had a pretty fierce rivalry with Fremantle at that stage. The Carr brothers, there was always a bit going on with Cousin, Curry, and a few others. Also had a pretty hostile relationship with Richard Copeland as well from Brisbane, and so we'd always have a few words. But yeah, I think you sort of knew the players that you could get under their skin, and some players that didn't really bother them at all, and you wouldn't waste your energy. Players that were a little bit timid, or knew were looking over their shoulder, you try and give them a little fright every now and then, and whisper a few sweet nothings into their ear.
Yeah, next one here we've got from Jono Petrisky, I believe it is. Do you still watch West Coast play or watch footy in general?
Yeah, not as much, but yeah, for sure. Like the great thing about being a life member is you get food tickets in at the stadium each week, so I've been getting along to that. Missed a couple of seasons being over in the US, so live streamed it from there. Still like to watch it. I wouldn't be across the game as much as when I was playing, clearly. But look at it from a spectator's perspective, for sure. And, it hurts just as much now when the guys lose. Want the best for them. I've still got a lot of mates that play within the team. So, you always want to watch their performances and hope that the team goes well. And, clearly got a massive soft spot for the club.
Yeah, as you would. And last one from Dan Marino, I think it is, on Twitter. Will you nominate for the preseason draft like everyone else?
Is there a Masters AFL? If there's a Masters AFL, maybe. If it's touch and there's a Masters, yes.
I think I saw, I don't know if this is true, but Aaron Sandilands might be coming back, yeah, so you never know.
It's been all
you might have to nominate.
Yeah, or maybe they're just looking for a bit of branding. They've got a business they're going to launch or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of the old boys coming back into the AFL potentially. Obviously, Gary Ablett as well. His name was put up a while ago. But
Cade Simpson as well, I think.
Yeah.
As well.
Who knows what's happening there. But, Bo, we really enjoyed having you part of the show. Thanks for taking some time to make it work. We wish you all the best for all the future, whether it's Ironman or business or life for the future.
Yeah, legend. Thanks, guys. I hope it goes well and really appreciate you having me on. It's nice to have a chat.
Bo Waters departs. Ethan, good chat that was.
Yeah, great chat. Not every day you get to speak to a Premiership player, all Australian, so
yep.
Great player. I think he was talking himself down a bit as well. Like, he was like, oh, I'm pretty lucky to make all Australian. You wouldn't see me on Brownlow night. And so he's very humble.
Yeah. But definitely very deserving of all his achievements. And someone's just walked into the studio like he owns the place. Cal Levitt, former host of the show. How are we?
I'm good, boys. Thanks for letting me come on and speak a few words of wisdom.
Yeah, you know. Words of wisdom.
We might just have to do this a regular segment. We've had a catch up with Luca. We've had a catch up with you. I have to get Noah in.
Well, Noah's been doing a couple of intros for us.
Yeah.
The last couple of weeks, so he's been on featuring around. But your boys, Peel Thunder and the Colts and the Waffle, how they going?
We're actually going pretty well. Record probably doesn't show it, but we are actually doing pretty decently. 1-3, so that sounds not great, but should be 3-1, but we'll move on from that.
What about your personal form?
Personal form, well, it's been a bit up and down. Started the season well, and then dropped off for a couple of weeks, but then picked it up a bit last weekend against the Demons.
How many?
19 and a goal.
Hey.
Check your stats. But you did say that a couple of AFL clubs have been in the hunt. Is there any truth to this? And are you willing to reveal what clubs?
The rumour mill.
I've been told that a couple have, but I don't know who.
Okay.
But I've just been told by a couple of people.
Are you registering
the football club?
Are you registering for the mid-season draft?
No.
Post the actual draft then?
No comment.
Can't reveal it.
Have to seek advice on that one.
Well, we'll see. Peel Thunder Colts. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
Big season coming for them. How many it's 20, no, how many games played? 17?
Yeah, 17. We have like 4 buys, so yeah, 17. Yeah.
See any of the senior boys around the club? There's a lot of AFL experience. Any mentors?
Jackson Merritt, fair bit, comes to the Colts and has a chat with us.
Yeah.
See how we're going. Noble Schofield, he does a fair bit with our leadership group, but I'm not in that, so.
Why not?
Oh, just not the leader type down at the club, you know, just go behind the scenes a little bit.
Too many zinger boxes.
Potentially, yeah, maybe.
Well, boys, I reckon we'll wrap it up there. Thanks for waltzering into the studio, Cal.
Thanks for having me on.
Ethan, we'll see you again next week for another big guest, as always. But until then, it's goodbye here on the Brian Ethan podcast.